live from Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, the Total Education Show, the talk shop for teachers, parents, and administrators. Here's your host of the show, Neil Haley, the Total Tutor.
We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network, powered by the Insightful Player Series. You can go to insightfulplayer.com to find out more information on Chrissy Carew. Insightful Player has partnered with NFL players who are great role models to empower youth. The NFL players are featured in a book. With even more stories, go to insightfulplayer.com and also on the Simply G Media Network, the Celebrity Show. I'm so excited to welcome the program. Insightful Player, Philadelphia Eagles wide receiver Brad Smith. Brad, thanks for calling and taking the time to talk to us today.
Not a problem. Thanks for having me.
Well, fantastic. So tell us a little bit about your background.
I'm from Youngstown, Ohio. My mom raised us three kids, my brother and my sister and I, and we didn't have a whole lot, but, you know, my mom was extremely strong, and she really preached education and faith and, you know, loving each other and taking care of our community. So that's kind of carried over, you know, in being an adult now to make sure I do the same things and take pride in my community.
And Brad, you saw from football is definitely a platform to really help change other people's lives and help others, isn't it?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. It's the biggest sport in America, and, you know, so many people look up to the guys playing and, you know, aspire to either, you know, young kids to be like them or even adults, you know, grown adults that you know, they relate to the men on the field and, you know, to the battles you go through every day. So it's an amazing platform to be able to, you know, to put something positive and really make a difference.
Okay. So, Brad, tell us what the reasons for starting a foundation. Did you always have that idea when you first started playing in the NFL, or did it come over time?
You know, I mean, you always, you know, thought about ways to make an impact and help. Then you just try to find different ways to do it. It wasn't until my second or third year that we kind of realized, you know, we were doing things, you know, to help, whether it was giving money or holding football camps and things like that. But the foundation just helps give it a backbone, you know, especially, you know, for tax purposes, all the money that's going out to make sure we take care of ourselves and we can give even more back to the community. And then, you know, it kind of gives people, you know, that want to help out, a place they can go to, and whether it's a website or whatever, that they can realize how authentic it is and how much we really want to help. So it's been going about 7 years now, so it's been a tremendous blessing.
So what is your mission for the foundation? What types of programs do you run with your foundation?
We do a little bit of everything. We of course we have football camps, and we have life skills classes. You know, we help kids. We help youth football teams, whether it's, you know, the low on money, on equipment, and jerseys, and things like that. Life skills classes for girls, and, you know, we teach them how to dress properly, how to handle themselves on social media, goal setting. And my wife, Dr. Roslyn Smith, she brings in CEOs from, you know, all around the country, female. They sit down and talk to the kids, and they really try to give them a positive image and people to look up to.
Quite interesting, especially having your wife involved in the foundation. A lot of athletes don't have their partner helping them. It must be a great help to have her, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. She keeps everything going, everything in line, all the paperwork, all the you know, the organization, logistics. You know, I can kind of tell her, you know, what I have in mind, and she can take it from there and, you know, contact the right people and make sure that it's, you know, where it needs to be. So she's been tremendous.
And I'm sure you're very happy to know that you're developing this foundation during your NFL career, so when your career is over, you'll be ready to move on to really putting a lot of time and effort to continue to grow the foundation. Isn't that true? And to really make more and more of a difference after football, it seems like, by having it for that many years so far.
Absolutely. That's the goal.
And where do you see this foundation? Where do you want it to be in, like, let's say, the next 5 years?
Just continue to do what we're doing and help more people. So finances is always the biggest thing, you know, to reach more people. But at the same time, it's time. It's spending time. It's talking to kids and spending time with them and connecting them with the right people, positive role models, and investing. I mean, it doesn't have to be a whole lot of kids, but if we can get enough kids that we can really sit down with, really pull into, that it makes a difference in lives as opposed to just going for sheer numbers. You know, we really want to be impactful.
And what area is your foundation located?
It's in Youngstown, Ohio, is where it's based.
Youngstown. Okay, so you're not far from me at all, Brad, where you grew up. Our flagship station's Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania, so not too far at all, for sure. Yeah, absolutely.
Not at all.
So that was a different experience playing in Missouri from being out in Youngstown, right? Growing up in Youngstown to going to Missouri, way different environment. Wouldn't you agree?
I mean, really not much different from different parts in the country. I mean, climate may be slightly different, but... there's really not too much difference. The people are great in Youngstown. They're great in Missouri, too, so I can't really say there's much of a difference.
So maybe it's two towns that are smaller type towns and that type of a situation for sure. Okay, basically, Brad, tell us how you met Coach Carew. I want to hear that story.
I've heard of her, and a couple of my teammates that I played with, I've talked with her, and our type of players, and she reached out and kind of connected from there.
What does it mean to be an insightful player, Brad?
It's an honor that Chrissy and her team would kind of see me as a person that's insightful, that that's doing positive things and that has other people in mind. So I just try to try to be a good person, try to be a good example to my kids, and thank God. It was a blessing to be able to connect with Chris.
Well, absolutely. She's tremendous, and the players that are insightful players, Brad. Just amazing, the fraternity that's developing of the players and how great character they have and how they really make a difference in the community, the people that are insightful players for sure.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So, Brad, so what's going on? Great season, definitely, with the Eagles, especially the start was a little slow. You have great expectations for next year? You're excited about next year?
Yeah, I'm excited. I missed a big chunk of last year with the injury, so I only played four or five games at the end of the year, so I'm just itching to get back out there and start the season to see how far we can take it.
Take it as far as you can, for sure. And I'm a big fan of Shady because I watched him play at Pitt, and he's just unbelievable. And it's an exciting team, so I'm sure you were like, wow, I wish I could have played more, especially with the offense. That offense is pretty interesting with all the plays, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I totally agree. I'm excited about that.
I was checking out some of your background. Big Wildcat guy in your career, for sure. And I remember Pitt was running the Wildcat at one point in time as well with McCoy at times. So it's quite interesting to watch exciting different types of football, for sure, Brad, and the excitement and the hope. And when you're injured, that really helps. You need to have character, right? Especially when you're sitting down wanting to play football. You're like, let me get back on the field, right? That's how you felt.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, you're right on here. You have to be patient. You got to, you have to be committed, with your rehab, and you got to be in a good space with your mind. It's easy to, you question, your value. A lot of guys have gone through it, so you stay strong and you just keep working hard.
Okay, Brad, where can we find information on you? I know that you probably social media wise and website wise, and information on the foundation.
They can go to truefoundation16.org. That's truefoundation, the number 16.org. I'm on Twitter at RealBradSmith, and that's about it for me. Those two, be able to learn a lot more.
Well, I hope you have a fantastic offseason and another great year with the Eagles, and hopefully, back healthy again, especially with the offense and with Chip Kelly's offense. You'll have a lot of fun running, being part of those plays for sure, and excitement. So get healthy, get back, and be ready to have an awesome season next year. So best of luck to you, Brad.
Great. Thank you very much.
All right, take care. Okay, bye-bye. You're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, powered by the Insightful Players Series, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Total Education Celebrity Show on the Total Education Network. Again, TotalTutor.net for more information. Twitter, Total Tutor, Neil S. Haley. Facebook, LinkedIn, Neil Haley. Instagram, Total Tutor. And always excited to have a celebrity on, especially a second time. But she's doing a lot of interesting things, and she really promotes us as well. I want to welcome the program Adrian Janik, celebrity AJ from Overhaulin. Adrian, thanks for calling, and look forward to our conversation again. How are you?
Good, good. Thanks for having me back again. My gosh, what an honor to be called back a second time.
Hey, you're used to those callbacks for, you know, other things, and it's interesting. I like having celebrities on that are doing things. You know, some of them just have one project, and they continue to promote it, and it gets old, and our listeners want new and exciting things. So what's new with Adrian since last time you talked? You're the talk show host. You were doing a really interesting thing. What's going on? Update us on that end and some of the other projects you have.
Okay, well, my gosh, last time we spoke, I know I spoke about my new show. I'm in the fitness world now. It's called Fit, Famous, and Fabulous, and that premieres in April. I know originally I think it was supposed to premiere earlier this year, but the network pushed it to April because, you know, they didn't want the show to get lost with the Olympics, and, you know, they kind of wanted to do their own, you know, spring premiere, which is fine. So Fit, Famous, and Fabulous now premieres in April. I've been doing a lot of modeling, surprisingly. I'm still shocked that I even book work. I always say, not bad for an old lady. Because I am going to be 40 this year. I'm not going to lie. I can't lie about my age anymore because you can just always look it up on the internet. And my Ford has been getting me a lot of work. I mean, I just did the Dockers campaign, the spring campaign that should be out, and you should see the posters and Kohl's the next couple of months. I've been doing, you know, just a lot of print work and, you know, a lot of fitness work as well. So it's just, I'm so grateful for Ford and modeling, because they've been keeping me busy lately, along with my son.
So tell me about the fitness thing, and then we're going to go back into, again, the celebrity thing and how cool it is. And I can't wait till it airs, and we'll have to tweet it out, and then we'll have you back on to talk about that as well, especially promoting a different celebrity that you're going to have on, and for our listeners to check out that interview and everything. But tell us, like, has that opened up the fitness modeling thing? Explain what types of fitness modeling stuff you do.
You know what it has? Just because, you know, when I was on Overhaulin, you know, I ended up doing a lot of automotive stuff, you know, going over to the Speed Channel and building my own car, doing a lot of appearances and doing a lot of work and endorsing a lot of automotive products. But now, all of a sudden, I'm kind of in this fitness world. All of a sudden, I'm like, wow, I'm getting fitness jobs and, you know, asking to, you know, kind of represent and endorse certain products. And, you know, which is fine, because I've always been into health and fitness. So for me, it's nothing out of the ordinary for me. And it's actually, I kind of like it, because that's the kind of lifestyle I have. So it definitely opened the doors to the fitness world.
So tell me, how would you be modeling? Explain, like, the type of modeling gigs you get in fitness. So for our listeners, especially understanding, oh, I did all these different things, but they especially as the teacher, I want to educate people that what a model does. For example, you get a call up to do they want you to do a certain campaign or a certain situation. So you just show up for a shoot. What about in fitness? What types of products are you endorsing and stuff?
You know, a lot of clothing, a lot of fitness clothing, because, you know, a lot of people think, oh gosh, you know, models are these tall, skinny girls. But the good thing about being based here in Los Angeles is Los Angeles is all about healthy-looking models, not the really stick-thin, you know, not-so-healthy-looking girls, which, you know, that's more Europe, more Paris and Milan, where they, you know, they like the girls a little bit thinner. But here in Los Angeles, you know, we represent a healthy lifestyle, and they like the girls to look healthy and have a little meat on their bones, which is perfectly fine with me, because especially having a kid, you know, it's like there's just no way I could be this, you know, thick, thin girl. And, you know, when clients look for models to, you know, wear their fitness clothes, you know, they want girls to actually look like, and girls that actually go to the gym and work out. So that's where I have my foot in the door, because I definitely work out. I definitely work hard. You know, I eat healthy most of the time. You know, I'll have my son's leftover mac and cheese every now and then. But, you know, we have a pretty healthy lifestyle at home, too. So to be able to represent a company that, you know, wants to have healthy models, that's just a plus in my book.
Well, absolutely. With the problem of anorexia and you know, models that are starving themselves, it's just, it's not a healthy look, and it's definitely a horrible role model for young children, especially young girls.
It's tough to always tell new girls that, you know, when I say new girls, I mean new models that get into the industry, and you know, they're always asking me, oh my gosh, how do you stay so thin? You know, I need to lose 5 pounds, and I'm looking at them like, are you joking? Like, what are you seeing, or who told you that you need to lose weight? Because at the end of the day, it's all about retouching. They can do anything on the computer these days. I mean, I've watched a really good photographer friend of mine retouch me on his computer, and he made my hair fuller, he made my ears a little bit smaller, you know, he made, you know, kind of shaved off a little bit, you know, to make my waist look, you know, tiny. So, I mean, anything is possible these days. You know, they can make you tan, they can make you lighter. So I think girls and women put too much pressure on themselves. And I always say, it's all an illusion. That's what Hollywood and, excuse me, modeling is. To me, it's all an illusion, because it is.
Yeah, that's great you're talking about this, because, again, sharing with families out there, the girls saying this, there's lots of touch-ups in the game of photography, making you look bigger for if you're talking about a muscle-bound person, or making you look smaller when it comes to a petite model. Adrian, from that process, and when you go ahead and you do a shoot, what makes a successful model? Or is it you're easy to work with? Is that what gets you a lot of work in a lot of ways? Because there's always beautiful faces and beautiful models, but yet to be a great professional model, you have to be able to really be there and work hard, right? They're not just hire somebody just because of their looks. You got to be able to be the right professional that shows up on time, is willing to listen to the photographer and get the right shots.
Well, so that definitely is a lot of it. And surprisingly, people think, all you have to do is be this, you know, beautiful creature. Well, like you said, excuse me, I don't know what's wrong with my...
That's okay. That's fine.
You know, there are tons of beautiful women, beautiful models out there. But at the end of the day, it's all personality. It's being professional, being on time, being able to take direction. And that also goes for television as well, because... guess what? You could be the most beautiful person in the world, but if you have a crappy personality, you don't get along with people, you can't take direction, guess what? The person right behind you is going to take the job that has all those qualifications.
And I see how great Adrienne is transitioning to her new gig, and I'm just interested as an educator saying, let's teach the modeling thing, but let's go back to the television show. You talked about how cool it was to be working out, and it's not just working out with the celebrities, you're also involving the healthy lifestyle as well. So tell us, basically, now it's going to air in April. Have you shot any more shows since the last time we talked?
No, we're just, you know, promoting the show right now and see how it does, and, you know, see if there's going to be a season two. But the show, I've got to see a little, you know, clip of it now, every now and then, and it is just shot so beautifully. The director did just a great job with lighting, because I'm all about good lighting. And here, you know, here it is again. It's like, oh, wow, you know, your skin looks so perfect, or, you know, your hair looks great. It's like, okay, I've got a hairstylist, makeup artist. I've got great lighting. But it's just, the show is just so, it just shot so well. And, you know, we show the celebrities in a very relatable light. And I think that's going to be the difference between, let's say, this show and watching them on, let's say, an entertainment show, because we show them sweating. We show them, you know, working hard, and they're talking about, oh gosh, I hate doing this workout, but I have to, you know, get in shape for this role. It's, you know, they're just like all of us out there, you know. They're very, very relatable on the show. So I think that's what we're going to see this season is, you know, we can relate to them and their likes and dislikes, and, you know, oh, they hate doing 10 more crunches, or they don't want to, you know, do, you know, 20 more minutes of cardio. So, and it's fun, you know, we laugh, and I had a blast. I just absolutely had a blast. I met so many great people and learned a lot from their trainers, and, you know, tips about eating. And, for example, like also Brandi Roderick, she's really into alkaline water. And I learned that alkaline is a good age fighter. It's this good anti, it's alkaline, it's a good anti-aging property, which is also found in watermelon, which I love. So this summer, I'm stocking up on watermelon and alkaline water because I am not going down without a fight. This is going to be 40. Oh, no. I'm going to fight this thing.
Well, that's very good, and especially in California. And I'm sure you age more in sometimes in California and Florida with the sun all the time than other people that have seasons. You guys are could be exposed to different certain UVAs and things like that. So great strategies to definitely look
for. It's just hard to age in this town to begin with, and it's also hard to age in this industry because it's so focused on youth. That it's hard not to, you know, I look back at pictures, you know, when I first started out and I've got this full plump face, you know, no wrinkles or pores. And now it's like, okay, I see the lines, I see the age spots, a few gray hairs are starting to, you know, sprout. So it's definitely, I mean, I'm not going to lie, it's definitely a tough town to age in. So,
but what do you do? We talk about life after. Let's say sports for athletes, you know, you have your looks, athletes have their, talent. And once their talent diminishes, they figure out life after their career is a little shorter than yours. You'll go at least to, you know, maybe possibly your 50s. Some models go even longer if they really work on eating healthy, which we talk about. We're going to definitely promote in the show again and working out right and not working out. So tell me what life will be after modeling and hosting for Adrian, or Adrian hopes to host for as long as Barbara Walters, but at least for modeling end.
Oh, gosh. From, you know, life after modeling, I mean, I look at Christy Brinkley, who just turned 60, and she looks absolutely fabulous. She's my new role model along with Sophia Loren and who's the other one? I'm blanking out.
That's okay.
Raquel Welch. And, you know, it's, I just look at them and they're just gorgeous women. But for me, I think, you know, once the modeling dwindles down or, you know, also my TV career, I'm thinking, I mean, I love this industry. So I'm thinking production or behind the scenes and, you know, creating new shows and, you know, I don't really see myself directing, but who knows? You never know. I never thought I'd get into TV. So I don't want to say never, but, I would think more behind the scenes, behind the camera.
And you never know what's going to happen, and specifically right place, right time. And before you know it, you're doing something else we heard about in your stories before about it was the right place, right time for Adrian where she didn't expect to get the call. So you never know the next place. And people listening now saying, well, you know what, she might be a good television host for news or certain things like that. You never know where you're going to end up going. Maybe you'll be on Entertainment Tonight before you know it saying, you know, you're so relatable. What a perfect thing. We need to make changes or, you know, all those Access Hollywood things. People are going to watch your TV now. They're going to watch you do this hosting thing in another light, unlike the overhauling, and say, are you the right person? Are you going to be on that list to possibly call? And you know that's how it works.
Yeah, and I think that also goes for just life in general. I mean, don't close any doors because, you know, you've never... You just keep an open mind, because if you just kind of keep this one-track mind, you may be passed up amazing opportunities.
Exactly, yeah.
And how I see life in general. So always keep an open mind. You know, don't assume certain things. Don't think you're not going to be right for this job, because guess what? You just never know, especially these days. You know, just to even have a job, it's tough out there. So I always just say keep your, you know, eyes open. Just be open about everything, because you never know what other doors are going to open for you.
Okay, so Adrian, where can we find information on you? Again, enjoyed the conversation. Definitely going to have you back up a couple months. You're going to have to tell me what the response is of the television show and how our listeners have to push and watch so that we have a season two. But where can we find information on you and learn more about you?
Definitely on Twitter, because I'm always on Twitter, which is at Adrian Janik. And, no, definitely. I mean, I know overhauling is still going on. They're about to shoot another season. And I've heard, I don't know if the rumors are true, but I've heard that they may call me back to maybe do an episode or two. Who knows? Like I said, I will always be forever grateful for overhauling, and I would love to go back if they call me to help out with the car or two. So we'll see between that and Fit Famous and Fabulous, and of course my son who just turned 4. I mean, being a mom is my number one job, so Twitter is where it's all at for me.
And so, Adrian, the older episodes are still showing on where? For, like, the ones that you were on, for Overhaul?
On Discovery Channel and, I believe, Velocity. I'm almost positive Discovery, because I was looking at the channel the other day, and my son was like, Mama, that's you! So he was so excited, but confused. He's like, wait a minute, you're there, and you're here in front of me.
How's that work? Yeah, that'll be a process for him to understand. Well, thanks again for calling, Adrian. Best of luck to you, and we'll be in touch, okay?
Okay, sounds great.
All right, take care. You're listening to Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network, and we'll be back in just a moment. We're back to the Toll Education Celebrity Show on the Toll Education Network. Again, tolltutor.net for more information. Twitter, tolltutor, Neil S. Haley, Facebook, Neil Haley, and LinkedIn. And I'm so excited always to bring to the program, I guess, professor of hip-hop and rap, Sean XLG, author, and much, much more. Sean, last time we talked, it seemed like it's been forever, but how are you?
I'm doing well, man. Everything's been quite busy over the last few months, so it's been pretty hectic, but everything is going along real well.
So you'll have to update us at the end and definitely get our listeners to plug away on that stuff. And the way Sean and I met, and I said, hey, you bring some awesome rap and hip-hop stars, especially from a time that people might have forgot, but you know what? It's just the best time, I think, in music. So, Sean, who are you bringing as our guest tonight?
Tonight we have a special guest, Icon, the first female hip-hop MC in history of hip-hop, and that's the legendary, luminary MC, Sean Rock.
That's me. I'm in the building with y'all guys, and I'm here to, you know, just really, you know, kind of talk about who I am for some of the people who don't know who MC Sean Rock is. So, and just, you know, ask me what you want to ask.
And I will, and then I always will ask the historian, Professor Sean XLG, to give us a little bit more in this whole process. So let's kind of go into specifically enough, go with Sean first, and then go to Shaw in a way and say, you know, we're going to go and specifically, did you ever think you were going to do this? But first, Sean, take us back to what the time when Shaw got involved and how people will remember her, especially that are fans of this genre.
Yeah. Sean Rock goes back to the legendary hip hop act, the Funky 4+1. And Sean Rock goes back to the beginning. In fact, outside of Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five, the Funky 4+1 was the second largest major rap act to come into hip-hop. And back around 76, when Grandmaster Flash was doing his thing as a DJ on the streets of the South Bronx throughout New York, Grandmaster Flash had gained such a huge following that he began to get MCs like Keith Cowboy, who became Flash's first MC. And then, of course, Melly Mel, Kid Creole, and they later were bring on Mr. Nest, who goes by the name Scorpio, and then Raheem of the Furious Five was one of the original members of the Funky 4+1. One of the original members of Funky Four. And Raheem, there was a battle between the two groups that never really quite materialized. But they showed up for a battle. Flash and the Furious Five was the most popular rap act in hip-hop at that time. And so the Funky 4+1, they made a little bit of noise, but Raheem left that group and joined Grandmaster Flash and the Furious Five. They were actually the Furious Four before he joined. And then, of course, the Funky 4+1, they moved on. They did their thing. They came out with the That's the Joint, one of the hottest rap records in the history of hip hop. Anyone who wants to go back and listen to hip hop in its real form, I would say go back and listen to some of those songs from back in the day from the Funky 4+1, along with Flash and the Furious Five, Treacherous Three, Cold Crush, some of those other legendary groups. But definitely back in 77, they got started and recorded originally, if I'm not mistaken, with Enjoy Records. Rapping and Rocking the House, those hits that came out under Enjoy, and then they later signed with Sugar Hill Records. And then, of course, they became the first hip-hop act to perform on national television when they were on Saturday Night Live. And if I get the date right, I believe it was February 18th of 1980.
Wow. Yeah, it was 82 on Valentine's Day.
Wow. 82 on Valentine's Day. Okay, I was close. I was close.
So, Shaw, did you always think you would be a rapper? Did you always think this was going to be something you would do when you were growing up?
Well, you know, let me start first by making sure that people understood. I started out as a B-girl, you know, in 1976. Anybody that came from that era that was into, rap musical, were into, you know, MC and started out, basically, you know, started out as an MC. And I'll say this in reference to the guys because there really wasn't a lot of women out there. So I started out as a B-girl and then transformed to as an MC as Melly Mel, you know, from the Furious Five or Cowboy or any, just about any person that was out there back then. We became the first group. I joined the Funky Four, the original Funky Four, which consisted of KK Rockwell, Chief Keef, Raheem, and myself. When I joined that group, I was the second member, well, the third member of that group. First was KK Rockwell, then Chief Keef, then myself, then Raheem. We were the original Funky Four MCs before Raheem left to go with the Furious Five. So that allowed me to be not only the first female MC of hip-hop, but also the first female MC of the first synchronized, organized group. Because although you had the Furious, well, at that time, you had Mel and Raheem, Mel and Creole and Cowboy, and later Les joined, we were still part of this first organized, synchronized group. Mm-hmm. And I say that because once Raheem went over to the Furious Five, I left for a couple of months and then came back and became the Plus One, which they had added two new members, which was KK Rock, it was Lil Rodney C and Jazzy Jeff. Within a six-month period of that we became the Funky Four Plus One, we had made so many different firsts. We had really, like, took New York by storm. We became the first group that was on national TV. We became the first group to really, like, wear graffiti, you know, on our clothing. Mm-hmm. We were the first group to use, like, the echo chamber behind our voices. We did a lot of firsts, and within 6 months, by the time of us coming together as a group, we had gotten a record deal. So that actually took us out of the streets and took us on tour with the Furious Five and the Sugar Hill Gang and Sequence and all, you know, and everybody that was a part of the Sugar Hill, you know, clan. And so when you ask me, did we ever see this, you know, being what it is? Yes, I did, because I felt like if anybody loved rap music, and I want to say rap music because for myself, I like to celebrate all elements. And I'm quite sure that there's a lot of people out here that feel the same way, from the B-girl to the B-boy, you know, to the graffiti, you know, to the DJ. I like to celebrate the culture of hip-hop and not just the rap aspect. And I always felt that if, you know, you love the culture as much as I do, then you will push it to go further. And yes, you know, I think that it's good that we do see, you know, a lot of different people, you know, change up the styles of rap or how they rap. I just feel that, you know, it's going to go a little bit further and they're going to continue to move further because you're going to have another generation coming and another generation coming and everybody is going to be taught. You know, I just think that it has a cycle. These couple of years, or decades, it has a cycle. Then the cycle will change, and the cycle will repeat. So yes, I always thought that it would move forward, that it would always enhance, you know, or be a part of history, always.
And I see what you're saying, but what about really growing up early on, especially when, you know, rap and hip hop are just kind of developing in certain aspects, the music, did you think that you would be as huge a star as you ended up becoming?
Well, I always thought that the culture would expand, but, you know, to say a huge star, I think the biggest highlight for, you know, me was when we made Saturday, when we appeared as the first group on national TV.
Yeah.
And so once I didn't think at the beginning that it was going to, we were just glad to let not only the South Bronx and New York, you know what we was doing, because they knew what we were doing. We was glad to share it with the world. And once we shared it with the world, we appeared on national TV or Saturday Night Live. To me, I think that was the turning point for all of us, because that's when we realized that rap music was going to be big, you know, and it was going to mean a lot to everybody. So I think in the beginning, we probably did, but I think once we realized that we were on TV, we knew that it was no turning back.
And what's really amazing in that fact, and just kind of going back to that history again, rap music was on only at a specific time of night, rap and hip hop. You'd have to listen late nights. You'd have to record on my station in Pittsburgh, WAMO, but they would only play it at night. It was a very difficult thing to find the music, but once it went mainstream, and Shaw talks about, you know, just getting on Saturday Night Live, just big breaks happened. And we remember Sean about those specific things and what happens and how the music changed and how it became so mainstream. We talk about the Fat Boys, we talk about, you know, the different groups that we've had on this show, but what makes Shaw so different compared to some of those other stories?
I think what makes Sha's story so different and unique is the fact that she is the first female MC. And the significance of that is she opened up the doors to Sequence and to Mercedes ladies that were out there at that time period. Ultimately, to all the solo female MCs, Salt and Pepper, MC like Queen Latifah. So it became, she was a trailblazer and let the women know, because hip hop has always been a male dominated art form.
Yeah.
And just to kind of piggyback on what she was saying, yeah, those of us in the culture love all the different aspects of the culture. And a lot of the people, including Nellie Mel, started out as a b-boy, which was a break dancer. So a lot of the artists were actually break dancers. Grandmaster Cass was both a DJ and an MC. And so back then, people embraced the full culture of hip-hop, which included rap music as just one part of it. And with Sha'Rock, when she came on board with the Funky Four, I just think they were trailblazers in terms of opening up the doors for other female MCs and made it so that hip hop had more of a balance in terms of gender.
And Shaw, we talk about different places for females and other music genres, how difficult it is to get involved in rock music or heavy metal or specific breaking through barriers in certain music that, you know, women have a certain genre that they have to kind of take after. And if you're not taken after that genre. So it must have been hard for you to be the trailblazer, the one that broke through, especially when probably people discriminated against you, gave you a hard time, saying, no female, this can't work, you're a female, this is a male-dominated thing. How did you kind of break through?
Well, you got to also understand that I come from a different era in time where we're talking about the groundbreaking era. So my thing is that I didn't have to prove myself by, how can I say, you know, just looking a certain way or dressing a certain way. Of course, I kept myself up, don't get me wrong. But back then in the era when we're talking about the groundbreaking era, your appearance didn't matter. Yes, it did matter when you were doing the group thing or you came out, but it was more focused on your skills. What was you bringing to the table? How was you able to deal with your fellow MCs? And see, my thing was that I never, all the women that came after me, I never really looked at what they were doing. I always model myself about the best person that I thought that was out there at that time, like your Millie Mel or your Raheem's, you know, or your little Ronnie C's. So I model myself after the men. And so what I did was, whenever I recite a rhyme or wrote a rhyme, I wanted to be effective where, you know, you had the guys or you had the girls, not just the girls, but you had the guys saying, okay, Sha'Rock is just not a female MC, but she's a dope MC. So I never had to deal with you know, the thing where you have to try to break in and say, well, you know, I'm a woman, so it's going to be hard for me. Because back then it was about your skills. It was about what you were bringing to the table, how you had to prove yourself to the street. And when you're talking about, you know, rock and, you know, the different eras of music, you know, that was one of the reasons why we were able to get on Saturday Night Live. Because when Debbie Harry from Blondie heard the Funky Four, and she heard me, MC Shaw Rock, I am what inspired her, not just my group, but I am what inspired her to bring us on there, and also for her to do a song like Rapture. You know, besides her listening to Melly Mel and listening to Shaw Rock, this was one of the things that she wanted to do to be able to make the song. So I think, you know, at that time, even when you have people like the Beastie Boys, one year they won an award, and they said, okay, well, you know, who inspired you? They say the Funky 4+1. Or you may have Common, you know, mention the Funky Four. And this is what I don't understand, because no matter what, all the people that came up behind us, you know, people from Jay-Z, people from Run DMC, you know, everybody know what the Funky Four has brought to the game, the Funky 4+1. They know what we did.
Exactly.
You understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
They know what we brought to the game. And so I don't understand why, you know, that the Funky Four is not respected like that, because every major artist that came after us know what we did. And no matter where you go, anybody that speak on anybody from the onset of the culture, unless they're trying to intentionally leave us out, they know what we did. It's just like, and I say this to everybody, and I'm gonna say this to y'all. I give credit to DMC, who I was doing a serious radio show one time, and he was up there. So he wanted me to have this, you know, this tape that he did. And what he did was, he said, look, I want to send a shout out to Shaw Rock. She said, because not only, DMC said, not only was she just MC, but she was a dope MC. And she paved the way for men like me. When him and Jay and Run went into the studio to record their Tougher Than Leather album, he told Jam Master Jay, make me sound like Shaw Rock on the Echo Chamber. And for him to give me that credit, right? And I mean, I put the tape, you know, his words on YouTube so people can hear it. You know, so they can hear it straight from him, because he wanted me to have it. But for him to be a multi-platinum selling record, and for him to be a dude, and for him to give me that credit, that's kind of deep, especially being a dude. You know, so not only, and I want to say to your audience, not only did I inspire females, but I inspired, you know, young men as well.
Exactly.
You know?
And that's great to hear, Shaw. So when we get back, we're going to go right into it more with Sean XLG and Shaw Rock, MC Shaw Rock. And honestly, Shaw, I mean, I listen to the music at certain times. I think what happened was, like, DMC, the Fat Boys, Beastie Boys. Again, if looking at my, I was born in 73, so at my age, so at my age at 41, I have a little bit of a recollection. We were, but the roof is on fire and different things, but miss certain specific things. And that's why I love Sean, and I love you kind of telling me specifically, this is where I'm looking at an education, educating people on this show about.
Absolutely. And the reason why I, you know, for years, you know, I thought people knew my story. I thought that people that was coming up knew who Shaw Rock was. But as I begin to start getting out there, and I see people start changing the story and switching the story up, you know, because, you know, over the years, I've heard a lot of people thought other females were first. And I was like, hold on. You know, let me straighten this out. I had to come out and straighten it out and really set the standards first, because they had a lot of people. This person came out with a song in 1979, and this person came. 79 had about 6 or 7 different songs in 1979, hip-hop songs that came out. So we all had come out with songs in that era. But we're talking about me being on the streets. I came out with a song in 79, but I was on the streets of New York, on the streets in the parks, performing, emceeing. So we're not even talking about records. And this is what I had to really come out, you know, and tell the history and let people know, yes, I did a song in 79, but we're talking about years prior to that. Then I was holding New York City down, on the streets of New York City as an MC and not just as the person that just came into the game recording records.
Right, with a record. Exactly, exactly. Because hip-hop preceded records.
Exactly.
And people need to know that story.
Exactly. Okay.
Right. But, you know what? But they don't know it unless you tell them. And people was running crazy, you know, with those stories and never correcting, you know, people
right.
like yourself. When you say something, they never corrected them and say, no, okay, it was Sha-Rock. They just let them rile them, you know.
Exactly.
And then I'm still not telling my story. You know, because a lot of people still don't know.
Okay.
You know?
Yeah, absolutely, Sean. I think telling the story on the radio and probably and possibly writing a book, that's the way to really get the story out and get some of the artists specifically that were successful that, you know, their careers are in a different era as well to keep your music living on. And I think what Sean XLG is able to do to bring the music that in your time and continue to keep it living, because again, people forget. And that's what's so great about what Sean's doing. And
I wrote a book, and I did write a book. I don't know if you know that, but it is called Luminary Icon. And, you know, it's on Amazon. It's in Barnes & Noble. You can go to my website, www.ncsharockonline.com, and you can get it straight from me. And so the book is out there, and it tells everything. I name, but, you know, I just, I'm truthful with it, you know.
Absolutely. Oh, well, that's great, Shaw. And what's kind of funny is I guess we're going to not take the break. Keep going as she's, you know, we'll kind of place that commercial in because good segue the way we've been talking about. What's going on with MC Sha-Rock? So, Sha, basically, once you knew it, when did you, you said, after Saturday Night Live, did you know that, hey, that you were going to be on a run and you get ready for the rides? Kind of explain that to us.
Well, when Saturday Night Live came about, we were already on, like, a 52-city tour. We were on the first major hip-hop tour ever. And I was with the Gap Band, Sequence, Uncle Charlie, all y'all know Miss Charlie Winslow. We was out there with them. You know, we with the Grandmaster Flash, the Furious Five, all of them. So we got pulled back off the tour to do Saturday Night Live. And so it was a whole, you know, big thing of us trying to get on deals. We're trying to be made, you know, and all of the, you know, stuff to get us on Saturday Night Live. And so once we hit that stage, I think it really didn't hit us until, you know, later when we came back to the streets, you know, of New York, and everyone's like, oh, we were like superstars, you know, and we were superstars already, you know, in the streets, but this was like on a whole different level. When you hear people, you know, say, I just seen you on TV, you know, this and that. I think that's when we realized that was the ultimate, you know, we had reached the pinnacle, you know, as opposed to any other, you know, hip hop group that was out at that time. You know, we just felt like we really was going to make it. But because we were young, you know, and didn't really understand the business, and our parents didn't understand the business, you know, we didn't know. So we were led down a path where we began to have bitterness, you know, in our hearts, you know, because of what happened, you know, with our record labels, you know. And this is a story that some people probably, some artists may, you know, go through or may have went through. But what I do know as rap artists, we was one of the first ones that's rap artists to go through this craziness, you know, with our label.
Okay,
you know?
So Sean, take us into that spot in your historical lens. We go through Saturday Night Live, give us Shaw's, like, run for the next couple of years, and then I'm going to ask some questions that are more personal on her level. Tell us about that. Okay.
Yeah, around that time, 81, after appearing on Saturday Night Live, I think that by 82, I think the group had kind of splintered at that point because of problems with the record label. In fact, most of the groups that were signed under Sugar Hill Records and the majority of those groups ended up having problems, and some of them actually ended up in lawsuits because of those heavy issues that were going on at that time period. I remember Little Rodney C and K.K. Rockwell, I think they began to they created Double Trouble, and they were in the movie Wild Style.
But let me say this, that whole Funky Four was supposed to be in the movie Wild Style, and I talk about it in the book.
Mm-hmm.
And that's something that a lot of people didn't know.
Right. And so when you watch the movie Wild Style, you'll see Double Trouble and not Funky 4+1. But I think at that time there were a lot of groups that were having. I know one group in particular were actually suspended on the label, Sugar Hill. So there was a lot of issues going on. And in fact, that's one of the things I've always been interested about is writing a book and maybe trying to get someone to film a movie on the Sugar Hill story, because it's a lot that happened with that label. But that would be huge. But around that time, and by 84, you could see Sha Rock performing in the hit movie Beat Street as a member of Us Girls. And so that was huge. And it looked to me as though that was your way of continuing back in the game of hip-hop and performing and just trying something new.
I even had to go through a lot to be on to even do that, because even with B Street, you know, my record label didn't want me to do it or wouldn't allow me to do it, and they negotiated something with Mr. Harry Belafonte where they said, okay, we'll allow Sha Rock to be in it if you allow Melly Mel to write the hook for Beat Street. And that's how I was able to really do it, because Lisa Lee and Debbie D was not under contract with any record label. I was the only one that was under contract. So in order for me to be a part of Beat Street, you know, they decided to say, okay, we'll let you part of Beat Street if, you know, Melly Mel could write the hook for Beat Street. And that's how I was able to do it.
So once Beach Street, tell me what's going on with your career after that. You're in a movie and a huge movie. Did your career? How many more years of a run did you have after that?
Okay, every now and then, you know, because of the bitter taste and all of that stuff that we were going through with the label, I sort of kind of like step back and just let the contract run out. Because, you know, after the Funky Four broke up, me, Keith, and Jazzy Jeff, we did about 9 or 10 songs. And these songs were good, but what she didn't do is that the label didn't release them. They may release like 1 or 2 in the States, but they released them all, put out a whole compilation album overseas. So we had songs overseas that we didn't even finish with the songs but somehow they went into the studio and recorded. So even though, you know, after, you know, B Street, I still sort of kind of record with the Funky Four, but also kind of after we did those songs, sort of kind of come back and let my contract run out, and just said that I will never, you know, sign again. I want to be able to just pick and choose what I want to do.
Yes.
And so that's what I did. Besides me, you know, going around speaking at, you know, different colleges or different organizations or whatever, I just sat back and just told the history, you know, and focused my attention towards the youth, you know, and really, you know, try to let them know what the hip-hop culture has been and what it will always represent.
Shaw, how difficult was that for you? You know, you were on a run. You could have continued to have that run if it wasn't for the record label. Are there any,
It was difficult. It was difficult in a way because, you know, as a female starting it, you know, and to see other females come up and they don't know who Sha Rock is, you know, and to not really be out there, you know, doing what I like. It was difficult at first, but I became, you know, I came to terms with it on the strength that I felt at ease. I felt like I can move around. If someone called me up to do something, I can do it because I want to do it, not because I was obligated to do it. Because no matter what, nobody can take away what I did for the culture. So I knew I had that. I knew I had the jewels. But the only thing that made me come out swinging was because when someone tried to take it and say that they was first, that's what made me come out and say, hold up, you know, this is my story, you know, and I can prove it, you know. And so I'm at ease because to this day I can pick and choose what I want to do. And a lot of times when you do stuff, I do stuff, you know, people call and they say, okay, well, I want you on this track. I want you to try. I probably do maybe like about 5 or 6 tracks a year. I do it, and they be good tracks, but I do it just because just for the fun of it,
right.
just because I love to do it. For me, it's never been about the money. It's been about the culture. And yes, people may sit back and say, okay, well, these people making millions of dollars, you know, this and that. Okay, you know what? If they are, that's good, and I'm happy, you know, because somebody should get it for the simple fact that, you know, the industry at that time, really, when I was coming up, they didn't want to respect, you know, rap music or the hip-hop
yeah.
culture. So it's good. It's good that, you know, somebody is getting paid for it because you're supposed to get paid for
right.
what you do. But when you do, when you love what you do, you don't put a price on it.
No.
And so, like I said, a lot of times, I don't care. I'll just do it on the strength that I can. And I love the culture so much that I like to get in there and dip and down whenever I can because I'm still good. You know, I still can rhyme. I still write my own rhymes. You know, but, you know, I just do it for the fun of it. You know, so I'm at ease. I'm at ease right now. And it's not as difficult.
So, Sean will give us another, again, a kind of summary on what he took from this once Shaw kind of left the mainstream, but kind of was still promoting the great music that she did and stuff like that. Give us some of those accolades that she did, Sean, after her career was over, and meaning after her record label was done and stuff. She did a lot of great things for this genre.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Absolutely. She's always been part of the face of the culture, if you will. And after the recording era, and pretty much when you talk about the Sugar Hill era, I think it went from 79 to 85. I think the Treacherous Three may have done the last record under the label before they actually folded. One of the reasons they folded is not because of the talent on the label with Sha Rock and some of the Kumo D, Angie Stone, a lot of the artists who went on to have great careers after Sugar Hill. One of the things that they had a problem with the label is that they really didn't want to change with the times when Run-DMC and the Fat Boys were coming out with the 808 drum machine, and things were kind of moving into a whole different sound, the way rap had gone into from Run-DMC when that era, that second era, LL Cool J, when they started coming out with the heavy big beats with the drum machines, everything kind of changed, and the label didn't want to transition with that change. And so it forced a lot of the talented, super talented individuals like Sha Rock to kind of move on. But as it stands, Sha Rock has always been a legend in the game, has always been the trailblazer and a leader. And like she said, she influenced 100% of the female MCs and pretty much 50% of the male MCs who came into the game. So she's always been a face of the culture and respected to this day. She has a new record out that's getting a lot of love. And like she said, she wrote the book Luminary Icon. And in fact, we were talking at one point of doing a Fresh Fest book tour, her and I and some of the other people who have written books. So, you know, so that nothing like that has ever been done before.
you guys got to go to the book fairs, especially like Miami, L.A. Those are the awesome things. Those book fairs are fantastic.
Yeah, definitely. Get some sponsorship.
I have connections in Miami, so we'll have to definitely. I cover the Miami Book Fair every year, so I didn't know you were an author, Shaw, or I would have said, see, and Sean, I always am having you on my celebrity show, but really, it's an author's show because I have one of my top ranked shows on my networks, an author's show, and then Shaw's an author.
Wow.
And so we're going to have to sit down, you and I, and talk just about the book, and then we got to bring Sean back on, just you and not me, Sean, for the author's show. Because to give this genre, to get this out, especially to book lovers, you know, you're getting that's the key. Because
and
again,
talking about this history, especially from, you know, because let me tell you, most of the time when you're talking to a commentator or somebody who does that really don't know, you know, the history, like, okay, like Sean's breaking it down, you know, but some people that don't know that the first thing they want to do is start it from the 80s, and they want to say, well, Sha Rock, you know, from the 80s, you know, this and no. We're talking about a whole decade before the Roxanne Shantays or the Queen Latifahs or
right.
the, you know, mm-hmm. or the MC Lights. And a lot of people don't know that. They'd like to start, and they like to start, you know, the females off in the 80s, you know, or really like, rap music in the 80s, you know, but I'm a voice of the inception of hip-hop, you know?
Exactly.
And I like to make sure that people understand, you know, that, you know, I'm a product of the inception of hip-hop, you know? Yeah.
And then that's why I'm really impressed by you, Shaw, because you're really bringing the author point of view in this and really telling a story. And you have a tremendous story. So where can our listeners purchase your book and learn more about you? Because, again, they're going to check you out and stuff. And we'll definitely have to have you back on just to talk about the book. I think this was more about the career, but the book is, I'm sure, spans your whole life from growing up all the way to today. So we definitely have to have you back on. So where can we find info?